happy Palm Sunday, depending on what tradition you are from. We're really glad that you're here on such holy day, spending your time with us. My name is Geneva Blackmer, and I am the program director for the Interfaith Center. We're located at the Miami University campus in Oxford, Ohio. And our mission is to invite people of diverse religious, spiritual, and secular traditions to participate in one another's practices in order to cultivate relationships and friendships and just to build understanding and to learn about each other's traditions. We also seek to unify people around common moral, social, and ethical concerns and values in order to build a more just and equitable world for all. I still see some more people coming in, so welcome to everyone who's joining us. Stephanie, would you be able to maybe monitor the waiting room and let people in?
Yes.
Yeah, just because I'm still seeing them logging on. So really happy to welcome Professor and Peer Emerita Morshida Stephanie Noria Sabato, who is an educator, designer, world traveler, seeker, student, and servant of God. Morshida Noria received initiations and training from several Sufi tariqah, and hopefully I pronounced these names correctly, including Pir Morshid Hidayat Inayat Khan and Pir Vilayat Inayat Khan, the sons of Hazrat Inayat Khan, founder of the Sufi message. He has also been initiated by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Saint Mother Teresa of Calcutta, Shekhai Nazim Haqqani, and His Eminence Kamtrul Rinpoche, her personal Tibetan Buddhist teacher. So lovely to have you with us, and I'm just so grateful for all of you being here today. I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. So you, that was quite an introduction, and thank you so much. And I applaud you with the pronunciation of the names. It sounded beautiful to my ears. Well, if you're here, you have an idea why you're here. And as Geneva said, I represent the Sufi path of Inayat Khan. And if you're here, most of you know about Pir Morshid and Icon, but I just want to give you a little snippet, and that is that he was an Indian philosopher, a mystic, a writer, a professor of music, and a great teacher of the 20th century. At the beginning, I want to just, and I should say that he brought the message of Sufism from India to the West in 1910, and for 17 years he taught, but he left this amazingly rich legacy of what's called the Sufi message volumes, that are a collection of his lectures and teachings. Quite incredible and prolific. And so I'm going to jump right in now, and I want to say, first of all, I'm not a Sufi scholar, but I have a rich stream from various Sufi masters in the Inayati, you would say, Hazrat Inayat Khan, Sufi message lineage, but other ones as well. I have traveled, and those of you that are Sufis that have traveled the world, you know, if you mention you're a Sufi, all the doors open, and it doesn't matter what lineage it is, usually very welcomed in. And so I feel like those teachings are also in this mind and heart stream that I offer to you. And really, that is the blessings of all those teachers, of which I want to give thanks. I always say, if there's anything of merit or benefit, it's really the great blessings that I've received. And if I muck things up, that's my great contribution. But I'd like to ask you a few questions. And I hope you'll say yes to at least one, but I say yes to them all. And do you desire to know yourself better? The real you, the inner you, not the face that we put on for the world, but to be more authentic, be your more authentic self. And do you wish to know and understand life better, to not be confused by circumstances, to have insight into them, and just to have a deeper understanding beyond the surface of things, to see beyond the beyond? And do you seek to know God really intimately, to feel God in a a divine parentage, a divine helper, a divine guide? Do you seek that so that you can experience God within and see God externally in our world manifest? And again, if you've answered just one of those as a yes, then I would say this is a good class for you. So again, the Sufi lineage that I represent is a Sufi's message of love, harmony, and beauty. And it's a message of unity. It's intended to unify people of different faiths and different backgrounds, beyond caste, creed, belief system, to find a place of unity. It's a message of spiritual liberty. So in that regard, while there's a process to go through in the school of Sufism, we don't have a lot of do's and don'ts. Teachers tend to try to be an example rather than just give lip service to an attitude of being in the world. It is a message of love, harmony, and beauty. And these three words, love, harmony, and beauty, are words that Hazrat Inayat Khan, Sufi Inayat Khan, used to define this Sufi message in a very pithy way. You could say, those of you in advertising or marketing, this is the tagline, so to speak. The purpose of the Sufi message isn't to draw seekers to a new path, and we certainly don't proselytize. I mean, this maybe is the closest thing we get to it, is these kinds of public lectures. But, you know, we're not on the corner and we're not handing out pamphlets and et cetera, et cetera. It's something that a person would have a calling or a sympathetic vibration, perhaps, with an individual and have an inkling that maybe there's something more. And they may ask them, you know, what are you involved with? What makes your life full? And sometimes that opens a way for someone to come into the path. But again, it's not intended to draw seekers to a new path, but it's to awaken seekers to the path which is already there for them. It awakens that. The Sufi message recognizes that truth is one, although it can be manifest in many names and forms. It's one truth. It comes from the one source. And therefore, the Sufi finds light and love in the divine spirit of guidance, the spirit of guidance that has moved through all the great messengers in the world. Whether we know them or not, they've given that light and love. And it is also hidden in many names and forms. You've often, I think there's even a book by something about meeting the Buddha on the road. You know, we don't know even who we're meeting in our day-to-day existence. It could be a totally enlightened being or an enlightened being manifest in a very simple way. The whole of religion, I think, is the glorification of God, to keep the name of God on our hearts and on our lips. I was reading something the other day by now Saint John Paul II, and his mantra was just Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Keeping the holy name of Jesus on the breath was important. So the whole of religion is glorification of God. Whatever that is for you that resonates with you, it is service to God. How do we serve God in serving others? That may be an obvious one with our families, but maybe beyond that if we have the capacity. And it's the investigation of the self. It's to be able to look within honestly and take inventory and see what it is that's useful to us and useful to the world and what needs to be transformed or refined. The more we do this, the more we will understand all religions or the purpose of all religions in their fullest light. And in this way, everything becomes clearer to us, including our purpose and our destiny. It's not an answer that one can give. Someone may come up, what's my purpose here? Well, it's self-discovery. It's for the person, the individual, to seek so that it can be revealed. It's a very important question. And it's not always a quick process, but it's a beautiful process, I guarantee you. So here, right before I say any more words, one thing I can say is that Sufism is often It's often said that it is based on experience. And so let's have a little experience here where we share in the breath together. And I'd like for you to just take, just observe your breath. Observe the inhalation and the exhalation. And if you will, draw the breath in and let it get a little fuller. Let it fill the rib cage. Breathe in that way, like the lungs are a beautiful fan that are opening and closing. Opening, or like a beautiful butterfly wing that's opening, expanding with the inhalation and closing and resting with the exhalation. And each breath should be slightly fuller than our normal breath. We're going to kind of work. It's an internal yoga. So we breathe in. Feel the rib cage get filled, not the tummy. We're not doing tummy here. We're doing this, the lungs, and then we exhale. By the way, when you wake up in the morning, do that 3 times. It'll clarify the whole system and clear away the gases that have accumulated during our rest when we're asleep and still. This will invigorate us. But right now, we're going to take these 3 ideals that Hazara Anai Khan pointed out, and that is love. So with this breath, we're going to breathe in all the love we can feel. Draw it from the atmosphere. Think of nature, beautiful nature that gives so much to us. Love, draw that love in. And that's God's manifestation. Draw that in. And when we send it out, we let it expand beyond ourselves. And we let that breath touch those that we love, those that we know. Breathe in again, love. And we breathe out. You can touch those more intimate relationships, but what about those that we don't know? Strangers. Can we love them, hold them in that love energy? And then we breathe in again, and we breathe out, and we think, oh, what about those people that challenge us? Some people might call them enemies. I call them great teachers. We bless them with love. Because often that's what they're seeking, is really our love. And then we're going to breathe in again. And this time, we're going to think about harmony. And what is harmony? And let me breathe out. Again, full breaths. Harmony is the desire to find a connection to something we love. So if we're in this state of love, we desire to be in harmony, to find a connection, to feel the desire to have a resonant vibration with someone. And harmony is very important because you know what it requires us to do? It requires to be a little less of our fixed self so that we can join with another or join in an environment, surrender to that. Harmony. Think about it when you're singing and you wish to harmonize with people. You're not blaring out strong, here am I. You're harmonizing your voice so that you hear all the voices. And so we know that when we love something, we desire to harmonize with it and understand it better. We want to be in cooperation with it. We want to accept it. And in this way, we become a flow, in a flow. Keep breathing. Deep, full breaths. Think of that accordion of the lungs or the butterfly wings opening and closing. And in the next breath, we think about beauty. Beauty. Not beauty in the sense of object beauty, but beauty in the sense of something that's an active principle, a living principle. Jalaluddin Mevlana, Jalaluddin Rumi, the great 13th century Persian poet, he said, let the beauty we love be what we do. Let the beauty we love be what we do. So let that beauty create a kind of refinement and a nobility in your manner, in your speech, in your actions, in your thoughts. Become beauty. Share beauty. Now, just to move out of that and into kind of a historical context of Sufism. Big clue. It's a big question mark. Because Sufism, if you look it up, you'll see it defined frequently as the mystical branch of Islam. And while one could say that, it is not the only definition of Sufism. I was speaking today with a friend of mine that I've made here, and he's from Iran, and he's a Muslim. Brilliant scientist as well. He's worked on the Mars rover, and it was so exciting when that was launched and landed a few weeks ago. And he's come to know that I'm on the path of Sufism. And so he said, you know, my mother was a Sufi. And I said, really? And he said, yes. She would take my sister and myself to the Sufi lodge, and we'd sing and dance there. And, you know, it was when he was expressing it, it was the sense of joy coming from him, a childhood memory. And I said, let me ask you, what's the thought in your country about Sufism? You know, does Sufism always wear the blanket of Islam? He said, no, not at all. It's much older than that. And that's what I've always been taught by my teachers. It's much older than that. So while Sufism can be a branch of Islam, it's not always categorized in that way. So we're going to explore some other things. First of all, I'd like to introduce the idea that Sufism is not a noun. It's not a category. It's not a column. It's a verb. It's a way of being. It's a way of living in the world. It's the way of interacting with people. It's the way of service and love. Sufism is adaptable. And that's why we can say, during this great flowering of Islam, especially in literature and art and architecture in the 13th century, it came forward because it was adaptable to Islam at the time. But it has been adaptable to other traditions as well. I could say that I have benefited from people that are Hindus that consider themselves Sufis, from people that are Buddhists that consider themselves Sufis, from people that are even in the Judaic faith that are consider themselves Sufis. They have this very broad outlook. So it's not easily definable. However, it is adaptable and it's living. That's the beautiful part of it. It's living, it's a living tradition and it lives in and through us. Sufism is, I would say, trans-historical. It transcends historic boundaries and it's trans-religious. And it therefore, it adopts this broader view and doesn't limit itself by saying Sufism is this or that. It's bigger. Sufism is really, as this talk was titled, it's an inner mystical path. It's a path that leads us to self-realization and ultimately God-realization. I mean, that's, to me, that's the goal and it's the purpose and it's the unveiling. It's the unveiling that leads to that. Sufism respects all religions, all faiths, beliefs, belief systems, caste, political systems, and so forth. It ultimately leads to unity, both within ourselves, to find that unity within, not fragmented or compartmentalized, and unity without. An icon says it this way. It's very beautiful. The mystic says the explanation of the whole religion is the investigation of the self. The more one explores oneself, the more one will understand all religions in the fullest light, and all will become clear. Sufism is not only a religion thrown upon, excuse me, Sufism is only a light thrown upon your own religion, like a light brought into a room containing all the things you want. The only thing that was needed was light. imagine that. Light. So what is that light? And where is that light? And how do we uncover and discover that light? And how do we live in the light? First of all, we know that in the purely physical sense, light illuminates. And in the spiritual sense, light also illuminates. It makes us aware. It makes things clearer. And this light could be called wisdom. It's kind of the light of wisdom. Now, Sufism, and an icon for sure, can be traced back to the ancient Greek philosophies, philosophical schools, I should say, and to the goddess Sophia. You hear that connection between Sophie and Sufi? There's a connection there. We'll talk about it in a minute. But Sophia also means wisdom in Greek. And she's not just whatever you want to say. Sophia is not just an intellectual concept. In this sense, she's a living presence. And we can have a relationship with this wisdom, whatever you want to call it. In this instance, we're speaking about Sophia. They say that Sophia is also the heart of every religion, just like a Nayak concept, all religions. And that Sophia guides those who wish to know and act in the light, to act in a way that is true and right and lasting. A sense of enduring, something enduring that can endure the test of time. Sophia throughout history has manifested many names and forms. And some of you are going to really be very interested in this. I know I was. In Buddhism, she's Tara. And Tara is a word originating from Sanskrit, and it means star, and it symbolizes the light of the soul, Sophia. Also in Buddhism, we find it connected to the Prajnaparamita Sutra, which is the great perfection of transcendent wisdom sutra. I know some of you here know that, or you've studied it. Also in the Buddhist tradition from another part of the world, Kuan Yin, this means Kuan Yin is the one that hears and sees all, transcendent wisdom, omnipresent, all-pervading. That Sophia, the Kuan Yin, the Prajnaparamita, the Tara. And in Judaism, here we are at a time of Passover, Sophia is called Shekinah, and she's the dwelling place, the settling of the light of divine presence. And in Christianity, she's the Blessed Virgin Mary, who gave birth to Jesus Christ, who we here refer to in the scriptures as the light of the world. So this illuminating awareness, and it can be found at the heart of every religion. I've only touched on a few here. And again, if we could think, what would we call someone in the lineage of Sophia, we could call them a Sophi or even a Sufi. So think about that. I think it's a beautiful connection. And just as Anayat Khan named three principles or qualities, the goddess herself, Sophia, had three daughters. They're called the Three Graces. You probably remember this from your studies. And of course, that's faith, hope, and charity. And they're also referred to as mirth, elegance, and beauty. And there's a connection there to love, harmony, and beauty. Sufism could be said to be like a prism and a mirror. And here's how. Sufism's like a prism because haven't we all had these beautiful crystals or prisms and the white light comes into them and then it scatters in all these different colors? Well, that's how it is. Sufism can be like a lens through which anything can come through and become clearer. And that disbursement can be the world religions. It can be different philosophical schools, but they might appear separate. When they return back, they return to the one light, the one source, unity. Sufism is like a mirror, because you know what? everything in life is mirrored back to us, but it's mirrored back to us through our own filter. And that's why two people can hear the same thing and interpret it entirely different. And you know that yourself. Perhaps you've read a poem, a passage, a teaching, something, and you read it at one point, you have an understanding of it or think you do. And at another point, you come to a much deeper understanding. This is because you've reached a point where of more clarity. And in Sufism, we talk about polishing the mirror of the heart, because if the mirror is cloudy or if the mirror is covered up, there's no reflection. And what we're going for, and that's very true, I see this in many other traditions, you want a very clear mirror. So that's what is reflected is pure and real. And so we work with these practices. And so again, Sufism is like a prism offering clarity, and it's like a mirror. Now the Sufis have methodologies for reaching and uncovering this light. Sufism could be said to be a progressive path of purification. And this I want to say, purification in this sense doesn't mean we're dirty or we have some sort of sin that we need to clear away. Purification is clarity, moving towards clarity. So we do these practices to help us move towards clarity. The Sufi practices allow the light to enter the heart. Sometimes the heart's closed because of circumstances that one has experienced in childhood or throughout adulthood, and it becomes closed. But Sufi practices allow the heart to open so that the light can enter our hearts and thereby all of our faculties of perception. And again, it's like being in a dark room and you open the window and the fresh air and the light come in. It's refreshing. So again, the methodologies or the technologies, whatever you want to refer to it, towards spiritual advancement on the Sufi path, it's somewhat individualized, and yet we also work in group. We work with breath. We work with sound. We work with meditation and contemplation. And all these practices, again, could be referred to as polishing the heart. Polishing the heart. There's a beautiful text. My teacher, early on, I think Wally, you may know this text, and others who know me have heard me refer to it. Kafsh Al-Majub, are you familiar with it? Murshida Vera, my first Sufi teacher, said, you read this book and you study it. And the whole book is about this process of purification. It also was very hard to get because it's the oldest Persian treatise on Sufism. It's a very old book. It was translated, those of you that are interested, by Reynold Nicholson. Nicholson, who translated so many esoteric language texts. It's a collection of interviews that the Sufi mystic Al-Hujwiri did. He traveled and he met with different schools of Sufism, because there are. It's like different philosophical schools, like we can see in many other paths. And what he kind of distilled things down to was this. The true Sufi is one that leaves impurity behind. Leaves impurity behind. And there again, we're talking about purification practices. But again, leaving purity behind isn't, impurity behind isn't because we're dirty. I just want to make that clear, because things can go in, our mirrors can be, or our prisms can be on different wavelengths, and it may sound different to your ears. But I want to say it's not leaving something that's bad about ourselves. There's nothing inherently bad, but there can be things that are confused or lack clarity. So we could say it's leaving confusion behind. Who wouldn't want to have more clarity in life, a more understanding, more wisdom? So in my Sufi tradition, we begin with the breath. And this breath is called the purification breaths. Now, some of you, I recognize you, you're from other, Nayati lineages here, and you've maybe learned the purification breaths in a different way. And those are all very valid, and they are so significant, and they all have their different purpose. These breaths I'd like to offer, and I can give Eva the link. So if you want to refer, you know, don't be worried about, am I remembering this correctly? I'll give you a link that will give these breaths and the practices line by line. It'll take you through. So these practices were given by Anayat Khan in 1925. And again, they were called the purification breaths. In other Sufi tariqas, they refer to these breaths. They do them in a different way. Nothing is right or wrong. They all have their purpose. But I would like to share these breaths with you. The breath, I'll just say a few words, moves in different directions. And it has a purpose. It's like we're going through our subtle bodies and our internal bodies and our energy bodies and our nervous system and subtle nervous system. And we're kind of moving the breath in different ways. You don't have to do anything except for breathe in and out. And I'll give you guidance about how to do that. Now, there is a phrase that an icon gave to put on the swing of your breath. And it sounds like this, and I will repeat it throughout the practice because it flips. The first phrase while breathing in is, I inhale divine light and life. And when we breathe out, the breath is, I exhale divine life and light. So we move from that very subtle light, bringing it into life, moving it from life into light. It's very subtle. Okay? So the first breath we're going to do, and the breath is given in a cycle of five breaths, and each one done five times. The first one is breathing in the nose and out the nose. In the nose and out the nose. So again, let the breath become a little fuller. Think of it as a kind of internal massage, an internal yoga. And I'll say the phrase for us. So we're gonna breathe in. I inhale divine light and life. And breathe out. I exhale divine life and light. Breathe in. I inhale divine light and life. And breathe out. I radiate divine life and light. Keep breathing in and out. And think of it. We're drawing this light in. We're bringing it into our system, infusing ourselves with light. And we're offering this life and light back to the world. It's a giving and receiving. A giving and receiving. Or one could say we receive first and we give. Breathe one last breath in the nose and out the nose. I inhale divine light and life. And out, I radiate divine life and light. And now we breathe in the nose and out the mouth. In the nose and out the mouth. I'm going to backtrack just a moment. You keep breathing in the nose and out the mouth to kind of clarify for those of other organizations or lineages. Sometimes that first breath is referred to the earth breath. And it's so because it's very stabilizing and the breath moves in a horizontal stabilizing direction. This breath is sometimes referred to purification through water. It's breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. The natural inclination of water is to flow downward. And so this breath is going deep into us. So we breathe in through the nose. I inhale divine light and life. And we breathe out through the mouth. I radiate divine life and light. Again, in through the nose and out through the mouth. Breathing in light and life and radiating through every cell of your body. Radiate life and light. Last time, inhaling. I inhale divine light and life, and I radiate divine life and light. Now the breath turns again. We breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. In some traditions, this is called purification through the fire element. It is the fire element. When we get to the end, you'll see the connection with all of it. But fire, what does it do? It purifies through heat. It cooks our food. It illuminates our path. It's the torch. I mean, the world changed. The humanity changed. Everything changed in history the minute fire was discovered. So we're discovering that fire in us, but I'm not going to let it burn us up. We're going to allow it to illuminate us. So we breathe in the mouth and out the nose. I inhale divine light and life, and I radiate divine life and light. If the phrase is complicated, just think this. Breathe in, light, life. Breathe out, life, light. Make it a cycle, breathing in the mouth and out the nose. Let the energy rise like dancing flames. And one more very conscious breath in the mouth. I inhale divine life and light, and I radiate divine life and light. The next breath is breathing in and out the mouth. And I like to think of this like our bodies become like an open window or like a screen door. That the air, this is the element of air. Some people use the purification of the air element, and breathing in and out, everything becomes very open and purified with the air element. So we breathe in the mouth and we breathe out the mouth and we inhale. I inhale divine light and life, and I radiate divine life and light. And like the air element, you know, especially here, we're living at the beach, we see branches dancing every which way or leaves going around or sometimes the sand twirling around. The air element's very open, very expansive. It moves in all different directions. So we're breathing in light and life and we're breathing out life and light and it's dancing all through around and just moving through our entire being as if we're just completely open. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. In and out the mouth, like sipping on a straw. And the way Anayat Khan gave the last breath, which is sometimes referred to as the etheric breath. The etheric breath, or this breath, is very subtle. And it's considered the breath that gathers all the elements and disperses all the elements. If it were colors, it would be rainbow colors, sparkling white light, like diamonds that are reflecting all the colors. And he gave this phrase, and some of you will recognize it as the prayer that we do for healing. But it is done on the inhalation and exhalation through the nose, very subtly, very subtle breath. And I'll say the phrase for us. So breathe in this phrase. Beloved Lord Almighty God, breathe out this phrase. Through the rays of the sun, breathe in. Through the waves of the air, breathe out. Through the all-pervading life and space, breathe in. Purify and revivify me. Hold your breath. And I pray, now breathe out. Heal my body, heart, and soul. When an icon gave the practice to his students in 1925 at a summer school, he said to do that three times. And if you listen to the words, I'll say it one more time, and you breathe in, Beloved Lord Almighty God, and breathe out. Through the rays of the sun, breathe in. Through the waves of the air, breathe out. Through the all-pervading life and space, and breathe in. Purify and revivify me. Hold your breath, and I pray. Breathe out, heal my body, heart, and soul. I'm going to give the secret here. That prayer invokes all those elements within that we've just breathed. So there should be no argument. The purification breaths, the elemental breaths, the da-da-da-da breaths, they're all there. And the elements are always alive in our being. So again, I'll provide this link. I want you to consider this a gift. It's a beautiful gift. If you only took 5 to 7 minutes a day to do this practice, it would have great benefit for you. So there's another mystic poet scholar that I want to mention here. His name's Hafiz. And he says this, fear is the cheapest room in the house. If we're living in fear, we're not in love. We're living in fear, we're in confusion, we're not in love. We're not in the light. There is fear. There's been a lot of fear lately because of the pandemic. We don't even know if 2 weeks from today we'll be alive. I mean, that's how it was in the beginning. We've learned some strategies now. And the vaccines are starting to arrive. Still, fear is the cheapest room in the house. Hafiz goes on to say, I'd like to see you living in better conditions. Who doesn't want to live in better conditions? It's not an outer state. It's not where we live or even how we live. It's what we're living from the inside out. And the great good fortune of doing quite a bit of study in the Himalayas, living in monasteries, very modest accommodations. And yet, you couldn't live in better conditions than in a little concrete room. Thank God if you had running water. Sometimes we didn't. We guarded the water. It didn't matter. We were in the Dharma. We were praying. We were practicing. Someone's not muted. Yeah. Thank you very much. So how do we live in better conditions? We do that by connecting with our resilience. And resilience is so important, because this is the very thing that we have to muster up. It's in order to bounce back when there's a struggle, when we falter, when we have health challenges, when we fail at something, when something's broken, when our heart's broken. We have to find it in ourselves to just rest there a little bit. But pretty soon, we will start to look up, and that's the direction towards the light we need to go. That's resilience. It's the ability to bounce back after we've gone through health, an accident, some sort of failure in life. Who hasn't had it? It's called life. And then there's this new term that's coming out, and it's called grit. In fact, I think there's a book that's written about grit and resilience. And I love to think about grit because, my God, we wouldn't have a beautiful stone cut stone in the world if we didn't have grit. We have to polish things. polish our heart. We maybe take a little grit and it helps us do that. And think of the pearl. It gets, or the oyster. The oyster gets that sand in them and it's like, get out of here. But what happens? It grits up beautiful pearl. So grit isn't so bad either. We might get a pebble in our shoe, but you know, I go down to the beach now and I rub my feet on the sand to smooth my feet off, my bum, my feet off. So grit's good. It can polish us. It's when we let those things define us or just start to destroy us. That's the problem. We don't want to do that. So here's the second practice. And I'm coming to the close, and I think I've gone over a little bit, and you all have been not quite over yet. I might make my time limit, but if not, if you want to stick with me, that's great. If not, the recording will be elsewhere on Facebook and YouTube. But there's another practice I want to give, because this practice can help us build resilience. And those people in my immediate care, we can take this as our next practice till we meet again next month. And we can add it to the current practice that we're doing. I want to talk a little bit about these practices and get back to this idea of living in better conditions. Those conditions are our inward environment. So we're going to repeat a divine quality or divine name. And the qualities are given in these ancient languages. And why are they given in ancient languages? I know some of you have heard this, but I'll say it again. It's the best example I have. When I was a young girl and going to Catholic school, I had a nun who was a mystic for sure. And she'd say to me, I'd be alone sometimes. She'd keep me in from the playground. I was often not well. There were emotional things in the family and it weakened my body. And she understood that without drawing my attention to it. She'd make excuses. You have to stay inside. You have to empty the trash and you have to clean the blackboard. And then she'd teach me these things. She'd say, I want you to never forget that the beautiful sounds that have been made by all the great composers in the world, that vibration still exists. Tune your ears to it. And she said, the breath of Jesus Christ and all the great teachers, that breath still exists. Tune to it. So this is also part of Sufism. She was a Sufi in a nun's habit, very traditional. And she was tall and she had big prayer beads. Everybody was scared of her, but I knew she gave me a peek under that habit. Anyway, she understood that. And Sufis understand this. We sometimes say we practice in the manner of our teachers. We adapt the manner of our teachers. That's why there's a great responsibility when someone's put in that role of teacher. To try to be as, you know, we're all humans, we all falter, but try to be as impeccable and given a good example as we can. So, like my sister Mary Eugene was her name, the nun, she understood that these great prayers have come to us in Sanskrit, Latin, Hebrew, Arabic, Greek even, Aramaic, these old languages. They're different than English, and they're different than the newer languages because they have, again, that vibration that's been set up, we could even say from beginningless time. And if we tune into it, we can benefit from all of the times those prayers have been said on the lips and the hearts of all the great devotees, all the people that have had the greatest devotion. And that's what we're hoping to gain a little bit of too, this great faith and devotion. So in the Sufi tradition, we say the Sufi prayer or the quality. We usually use beads. I have some on my arm. I'm never far from my beads. I have another little prayer here. A girl could never have enough prayer beads. Anyway. So some of you are saying, they said 33 times. Is anyone saying, why 33? It's a question that has to be asked. Well, let me just give you a little history about that number 33. It's a pretty magical number. For example, in the Vedic tradition, was a very old tradition in Hinduism, or that classification of Hinduism. There are 33 deities, holy beings, gods. The second level of heaven in Buddhism means there are 33 gods. Two traditions, two old traditions. Also in Buddhism, Avalokiteshvara, you sometimes see this Buddha with all these arms and heads, and that's the Buddha of compassion. That's the number of incarnations that this Buddha, Avalokiteshvara, took before reaching the entire enlightenment. The name Elohim appears 33 times in the story of creation in the opening chapters of Genesis. And it is said that in the Quran, the Holy Quran, as all these books and traditions are holy, there are 99 names associated with God, which are qualities associated with God. So therefore, a Sufi teacher would give this practice to their student usually 101 times. And there's a mysticism to that, which is a whole other lecture, which I would like to give sometime. Anyway, a mysticism of numbers, the hows and whys. Are you paying attention, Eva? Just invite me anytime. Anyway, we use these beads and they're divided up into, I divide mine into 11. There's my 11. But then I also divide them into 33. There's 33. And there's a spacer bead. And these two beads are said to be the hidden names that are waiting to be revealed to the one that has clarity in the Quran. So they're hidden names, secret names. Now the name I want to give you, and this is my second gift, first one, purification breath, second one, this divine quality. And this quality is an antidote to fear. Like Hafiz said, you know, the cheapest seat in the house is fear, but I'd like to see you in better accommodations. So who doesn't have a little bit of that every now and again? But if we want to overcome that, if we want to find inner strength and confidence to live in better conditions, this name maybe is the name that can help you. And the word is Kawi, Kawi. It's spelled or transliterated Q-A-W-I, but you could think of it almost like, K-A-W-E-E, Kawi. And it means this unlimited strength. It means endurance, endurance. It's a kind of resilience. It's like vigor and strength that prevails over things. I'm not talking about I'm strong. I'm talking about I'm strong. I'm strong in here. You know, I can help carry you. I can help myself. I can help others while I'm helping myself. This is the part that I'm talking about, this kind of strength, the one who is beyond all weakness. So I'd like to do this practice with you here at the closing. And I'll have a few more words before I really close. But we're beginning towards the end of our journey together. And we're going to just say this first 11 times aloud, kind of toning it. I'll demonstrate. And we're going to use the prefix Yah. Yah is like, oh, divine one. Oh, the one who I desire to know. Oh, please come close to me. Let me feel you near me. It's an invocation. So we're going to use this Yah and then Kawi. We're not going to rest really on Yah. We're just going to touch Yah like a bell calling us to dinner, a bell calling us to prayer. Okay, it's Yah. And then we'll go into Kawi. So it'll sound like this. Yah, Kawi. Join me. Yah. Kawi, Yah Kawi, Yah Kawi, Yakawi. 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 I'm going to be very honest with you. I lost count. Maybe someone else was counting. Doesn't matter. You can always pray more. Just don't pray less. And now we're going to whisper this sound, but we say it now softly, intimately, with the confidence that that quality has come near to us. And now we're not calling to that quality. I'm over here. No, no, no. We're saying, oh, you've come close. And now I'm going to whisper. You're whispering in my ear and I'm whispering in your ear. And we say, without Yah, I'll see if I can get a handle on these prayer beads. We're just going to say, Kawi. 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 Now it's even more subtle. You just breathe in and out, tuning to that vibration in the atmosphere, tuning to the internal vibration of that sound. With confidence that that quality is becoming enlivened in the atmosphere around us and in our internal atmosphere. So we just breathe in and out silently, the sound Kawi. Yakawi. So take this as a practice. When you feel you need to be uplifted, invigorated, feel strong, when you need to endure, who doesn't need that every day? So those of you that are new to the practice, you know, try it on. The words may sound strange, but the truth is, it bypasses the thinking realm and it tunes to a vibration. And try it and see if it doesn't have some sort of effect, positive effect in your life. I'm going to close with a few words and then I'm going to open this up if anyone's left. And if anyone wants to discuss things, I'm here for you. And we can have some conversation if you wish. And that part, I don't know. I'd like to see everybody, so I'd like to put it on gallery view. But for the sake of those that wish to be more anonymous, I'd ask that you turn your cameras off at least, and maybe if there's a way to change your name or something, you can do that. Now, I think Eva's prepared to handle some chats, but I like to just see you and talk with you directly. But these are my parting words. And any of you that maybe listened to it was a very big honor to be invited to the Universal Sufi Festival in Bangladesh. They asked me to send a short talk there. And these were the parting words, but they helped me to hear them. Even though they're from me, they're coming from somewhere else. And it benefits my mind, my heart, my being to hear them. They're good reminders for me. And I hope they will be for you. And if you've heard them, then just let them wash over you again. So these were my parting words, and they asked me to speak to the youth especially, but I think we're all young at heart. So we all have that youthful part. And so this is it. Do what you can to keep your balance, and do this through prayer, meditation, and contemplation. Meaning, please take some quiet time for yourself every day. It's not so hard. Just an aside, I was listening to a talk by Jack Kornfield and his wife. Her name's Trudy. I've forgotten her last name. I'm so sorry for that. I'll try to bring that forward at another time. But they were talking about, you know, they're the great teachers on mindfulness meditation. And she was saying how they're working with first responders and long responders during COVID. And they're teaching people, the nurses and doctors that are with the patients of COVID. It's a pretty much, and we know that, an emergency situation 24/7 for them. But if they can take a moment, even moving from one patient to the next, breathe, be present. Don't think about what's in the past or coming in the future. Be present, that can rejuvenate you. So keep that balance, keep that breath, keep that prayer. Spiritual practices are important. It doesn't matter what form. Again, just like St. John Paul II said, the name Jesus is enough. Buddha, Allah, Yahweh, whatever it is for you. You can just say that unceasingly. It can be enough. But tune to the frequency and vibration of that holy being, that holy tradition, and your lineage in Sufism, lineage is very important. All the teachers that have come before that whole lineage, that's that line of master saints and prophets. But more than just that, open to all the holy and wise beings, whether they're known or unknown to you. I believe if we open ourselves in that way, then they will come and they will guide us. They will uplift us. They will inspire us, and they'll protect us. And sometimes that protection is even from our own thoughts. You know, Sogyal Rinpoche, you might know him because he wrote that book, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. A lot of people know him from that book. He kind of brought a lot of Tibetan Buddhism to the West through his writings. He also wrote The Path of the Spiritual Warrior. But I was just reading yesterday or today that he said, the mantra seals the mind. So the mantra can seal the mind from negative influences, negative self-talk, negative remembrances. It keeps us focused on the holy name. Think about that. So tune in. And remember that the goal of the spiritual path is really to turn us into love. Love. Mother Teresa would say, we may not do great things, but we can do small things with great love. Let yourself be love. And again, be like the sun. The sun sometimes hides its face behind the clouds. I call that nature and meditation. I learned that from my great friend, Sri Kurunamayima, one of the great beings that's taught me so much. But the sun doesn't choose. It doesn't say, I like you, I don't like you. I will give you some light, I won't give you light. Be radiance, be light for others. Help lift them up, help shine upon them, and share your radiance and share it in love and light of God and all beings, all things that have manifest from God. Just be that light, be that love, and shine radiant. I really want to thank you all for your kind time and attention. And those of you, I think probably we'll put this on the the YouTube page. But those of you that don't know me, you know that I want you to know you can reach me through sufi-message.org. There's a contact place there to find me if you have more questions or need direction in some way. Oh, and Geneva, thank you so much. She put it there for you. So let's just close with a prayer of thanks for this time together, that we have the beautiful ability to sit together from around the world, and we have electricity and we have computers and all the things that allow us to be connected. What a privilege, but most of all for these teachings and for all the holy ones that have guided us through this time together and will come to guide us onward. I send my love to you, my gratitude. Thank you so much for the invitation, Eva, and thank you all that have taken the time to attend. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So we are going to open for a Q&A. If anybody wishes to ask a question directly, you're welcome to. You can go ahead and unmute yourself.
Only when you're speaking, though.
Right, only when you're speaking.
And I'm going to look at the gallery because I want to.
Yes.
Hi.
We did have a question that came in on YouTube asking if you could recommend a reading for someone who was just beginning with Sufism.
Yes, I can. And you can go and buy a book, but there is a wonderful website, and maybe Geneva. Okay, so I'm going to spell it. The first word is Hazrat. It's Hazrat hyphen Inayat, Inayat hyphen Khan, Khan.org. There are complete teachings out there of a Hazrat Inayat Khan. And if some of you are Sufi initiates and aren't registered, register. And if you want, there actually are some teachings that are available publicly, but in Sufism, we have different levels of initiation. For me, everything should be public, but some people don't feel that way. So there, if you have more advanced initiations and would like to see those teachings that are, and I'm going to name these names, some of you will or will not understand, but you know, the Sanghitas, the Sanghatas, the Gitas, the Gathas, and so forth. If you write to me, I can write to the person that's in charge of this database, and we can open that up for you to the greater levels of the teachings. But I would recommend the thing that my teacher recommended for me when I first started. There's a section in Sufi Message Volume 1, which you'll see there, which is called The Way of Illumination. She wanted me to just read the portion that was called the inner Life. So you can read that. That will talk a little bit about this path. The Sufi Message Volume 13 is called The Gathas. And that really is kind of a progressive linear teaching through Sufism, and it is often used in training students on this path. The other great book is called The Unity of Religious Ideals, which is, I don't know if someone can help me, Gemma, maybe Nur Latifa, somebody, Mumtaz. What message volume is that? The Unity of Religious Ideals. You can look it up. 10, okay. So those books are really good, and I think it does take some study and it does take some reading and thinking, you know, because it is an inner path, and those teachings are available to kind of ask you, is this for you? Some people don't want that. They want something that's more organized and external, but the Sufi path is kind of an individual training path for people. Although we do, as I said, we do it in a group, and certainly the students that we are all working together, we do it collectively, but there's some individual work that's to be done. I hope that answered the question. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions who's here with us on Zoom?
Or comments? Was it beneficial? Wow.
Seen some thumbs up.
I see at least one person. I hope so. Yeah. Wally and Ariana, did you hear me? Could you understand my English?
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Very clear. Thank you. It's good to hear. To hear all these things again.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Even when it's not new, it's still always fresh.
It is. And it just, it's like it makes us feel effervescent inside, like bubbles inside, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit like reading Inayat Khan, because he's not a native speaker. His language is very simple, and it's deductively simple. You can just sort of read through it, okay. But then if you really weigh the words, you see what depth there is around it. And if you read it again after 5 years, you keep discovering new things.
Isn't it true? It's so beautiful in that way. It can communicate at many different levels. All great teachers do that. Yeah. Anyone else?
Seeing lots of positive feedback coming in the chat.
Good, Sophia. did you have your hand up? There you go.
Yeah. I would like to know how love, harmony, and beauty are related or interconnected. Could you elaborate some more about it?
Well, and maybe just look up those words in that database I referred you to, because Mersha talks about that real clearly, about how one develops into another. And I apologize if I wasn't clear at the beginning with that breath, but he talks about we develop love for something, and we're not, sometimes it can just begin in a small kind of way, like a personal love. Mersha's talking, I think, in a more universal sense of love, but we start there, you know, it's like, we can start with just individuated love, but we want it to spread bigger so that it's has a broader scope. And he talks about love transforming into harmony through the desire of wanting to get to know something better or become closer to it. So for us, it might be the teachings, or it could be a person, or it could be a resonant vibration with a teacher. We want to harmonize with that individual. We want to be in the flow of their vibration. And then that naturally transforms into great beauty, because it's like, I can't think of any better quote than the one of Jalaluddin Rumi of, you know, let the beauty we love be what we do. So then it becomes an active principle of beauty, of sharing that and becoming that. And, you know, those great beings had such we can only imagine how it was. We see it a little bit in some films. Anayat Khan, he had great beauty and he had great charm. You know, some of you know I had the great opportunity of being quite close to his youngest son. And he would tell these stories of his father about, his father was always, you know, he's always looked so serious in the photos that we see of him. But the truth is he was very joyful person. And if someone came to him sad, they'd leave smiling and laughing. He uplifted people. And he said he joked a lot with people. He was happy. So that's a good image to keep of an icon. And his son, Hidayat, was like that. And to some extent, also Vilayat. I mean, they were just that way. You know, they were very normal, you might say, not pretentious. And those of you that know Pir Shabda, you know that too. Wali Ali, those people, you know, they're just, you meet them and you think, oh my God, what's so special about them? Why am I going to sit and listen to a lecture about them? And then they start to speak in this incredible, you know, but they still may go home and not wash the dishes or throw their socks on the floor. They're human beings too. You know, we're all working our way towards something, but, you know, have we arrived or not? No, life is taking us. And our inner life is taking us. So, you know, I'm off the subject. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Make sense? Yeah. Anything else? Was there anything in the chat, Geneva?
Not seeing any questions, just a lot of thanks and gratitude coming through.
Sweet.
Does anyone else have any more questions or comments?
So happy to see you. Alan, you're someone I don't think I've met, have I? Alan?
Hi, thank you. No, I've not been in one of your talks before. I've attended several of these. So I'm really excited. I am doing some interfaith studies of mysticism. So this really, really, really helps.
Thank you so much. And Susan, do I know you by another name, Susan Sutton? You look familiar, but I'm not picturing you. It's like, have our paths crossed at some point? You're muted. Let's see if I can unmute you. I can't do that. I don't have that function. I'm sorry.
Did that work?
There you go.
Okay. Somehow I'm actually off the, I don't know what happened. I'm not seeing anyone, but that's okay. I've heard everything everyone said. No, I also have been attending a number of these, and I have a friend who's a Sufi in California. And so I was just interested to hear what you had to say, and it was lovely.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you so much. Again, you know, the blessings of all the beings. If it can come through, I'm grateful. Yeah,
it was wonderful.
Thank you so much. And we probably know that Sufi in California.
I don't know. Diana is her name.
Maybe.
Diana Monk. I don't know. You might know
her. We know her, don't we? Wally and Ari, don't we know her? Diane. She does a lot of, she does help Shopta with the website stuff. Does she do website stuff?
No.
No, okay, not the same person. I thought it was her for sure.
She lives in Oakland.
Okay.
But yeah, it's Diana Monk. She was the one that told me about, you know, I think I actually went with her once too, but I went to one of the meetings with her once, but that was a really long time ago, so.
That's great.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, this was just, really, I got so much from the breathing and I've actually been listening a lot to Jack Kornfield and Tara Burke.
Yeah.
So yeah. I like them also.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. I was tuning into something that was lovely. Is that her name? Is that his wife's name or is that another? Is her name Tara Trudy?
I don't know his name.
It could be. And I was listening to Lovely too. They were talking together and about how they, in their marriage vows, they had committed to being each other's Sangha. A way of saying it. Isn't that lovely? Yeah.
Hmm.
And those of us in marriages and are, you know, consciously on a spiritual path, it feels like that. You know, we're in each other's Sangha to kind of keep each other on the path and the straight way. Andrew, it's very good to see you. Thank you for tuning in. You've written recently and just kind of jumped in with both feet. Thank you.
I want to thank you for today. Aloha from Hawaii. I've been doing some Sufi practices, mostly the dances for 40 years, but I never had a foundation in the teachings. So the pandemic has been I'd wanted to go on a retreat before the pandemic. I just didn't know it would look like lockdown. So
yeah.
So
it's an opportunity to practice, isn't it?
I'm quite impressed with my life, the Hawaii State Library, the number of books on Sufism that they have, because I've read and read and read, and so I feel like I'm up to speed now.
Fantastic.
After 40 years, Yaksan was my first teacher, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, it looks like our numbers are dwindling. Am I right? Because I can't see anybody but people on the screen. Is that it?
Yeah, we only have about 20 people left on the call. But, you know, that's okay. I think that some people only have an hour, so we tend to lose people right on the hour. Yeah. So thank you to everyone who stuck around. And, you know, does anyone have any more questions or comments before we wrap up?
I just want to say, Mumtaz, Thank you for being here. You look a little bit different than the last. Did you have the beard the last time I saw you?
No.
Is this a pandemic beard?
And I've got COVID hair now too. What a delight to be with you and your sharing and the practices that you gave us. You know, I've been a Marid for 45 years and already there's always something new. There's such a richness to the teachings that are available. So I hope I know everyone who was on this got that feeling about its availability and the openness and access that you give to everyone, my dear Nuria.
He's my buddy.
Yes.
And Jasmine, are you in Costa Rica now? Yeah? She's frozen. She got frozen. Jasmine, are
yes.
you? Yes. Yeah. Good to see you.
Yeah. Thank you. Lovely attending your class. I just love the way you put your love on the mesh.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you. And there's Janice and Robert. Hey, you two. Love the purple couch still. Maybe I'll go couch surfing one day out in California and come and stay there. Nur Latifa, you're doing some planting up there. She and her husband are our farmers, and she's got some good love she gives to a lot of people at the hospital where she works. So thank you, my dear. Toasting you for that.
Thank you. Love you.
I know. We're like this. Savitri, there you are. Love you. And Gemma, she's my right-hand person. She's the one that makes sure all the mailings get out. She's got all those arms and tentacles. She's reaching out all the time. And there's another of you on. I don't know you and I don't see you, but Marilyn and Enoch and of course, Nuranisa, Nancy, and Joshua. And who's Keith? Keith Washburn. I like that. Superman. Underdog. Yeah, underdogs are great. They surprise you. Because they're really supermen in disguise and women, right? Well, I send all of you my love, and you know how to reach me, or you can reach me through the website. And thank you so much for just encouraging me. You know, this is great study for me to prepare too. So I learn a lot too. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Send you my love and blessings.
Aloha and mahalo.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. Have a great afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks.